This is not just any podcast. This is Chew the Fat, sponsored by Marks & Spencer, celebrating 40 years in Ireland. I'm Patrick Hanlon.
And I'm Russell Alford, you know, that pair behind gastrogaze.com. And this week we find ourselves taking the tentative first steps into unknown territory, County Donegal.
Yes, we're here to meet the man who everybody is talking about right now, an esteemed chef, celebrated restaurateur and hotelier, and an award-winning author now too, who is helping put this county definitively on the map, not just in Ireland, but now internationally too.
Venturing up to where the Wild Atlantic Way begins, at the mouth of the River Foyle, the sun is splitting the stones as we arrive in the town of Moville.
Chef Brian McDermott, so I am the chef proprietor here at the Foyle Hotel in Moville in County Donegal.
And everything else. So,
hold on a second. A few more things,
we're sure. Now, firstly, welcome back to Chew the Fat, because, of course, you featured on the Blosna Heron episode very briefly back in Dingle. And now we are kind of on the opposite end to Dingle now. We're in Donegal.
You know, very interestingly, because my daughter reminded me this morning, she said, oh, is that the guys you spoke to when we were in Dingle? And she pointed out, you know, which we have a love for Dingle, because I think there's a brand in Donegal to Dingle and the whole Wild Atlantic Way.
Yes.
So, and I think we need to get someone to admit it's their first time in this county, isn't that correct?
It is both of our first times in this county.
We did come into the county very briefly once when we were on a trip for literally maybe a half hour, so in out. So I cannot claim to have properly crossed over into this county before until right now.
But in Patrick's case, you're going through the counties and you've realised you've now hit 32 of 32. Yes. I am considerably less than that. I'm not as well travelled as you are.
And I am frantically shaking my head. Can't believe that you have never spent time in this county.
Best to last.
Well, that's just about a savior comment there. No, you're very welcome. And I mean, look at the gorgeous, glorious day you got to arrive here.
Absolutely. Summer holidays has finally happened, so it's perfect.
So could you give us just a general overview of the hotel, its history, its rooms, its staff, the town, its offering, etc.?
So the Foyle Hotel is here. It's in Moville. We're on the main street, and Moville is a beautiful historical market town on the east side of the Inishowen Peninsula. You can't go much further. Further up the road, you're in Greencastle. You start to turn back in yourself. Then we're going in the direction of Carndonagh, right out into Ballyliffin, which is famous for golf, Malinhead, Buncrana, Bridgend, Burt, Muff and Quigley's Point. That's it in that 100-mile radius. So we sort of sit on the east side of the peninsula, and Moville's a coastal town. It's a seaside town with a population in and around of only 1,400 persons. At this time of year, which we're in peak season at the moment of summer, particularly July going into August, that goes fourfold, because there's a lot of sort of summer houses that tends to be people from Belfast and County Derry. So that's the ramping up period that we refer to, when you can trade up basically and provide the hospitality that you need. So I suppose for us, for Brenda and even Aoife, who are our unit, they're our family, and at the end of the day, no decision is ever taken without the four of them being involved. And I had ran around the country, as you guys know, doing festivals, talks, demonstrations, whatever it may be, radio, television. There's never any guarantees in any of that. You'll know that from being self-employed. And there's times when we're not making money. You know, that's the creative industry. Artists talk about it, chefs hide it. And it's almost like a thing of, oh, I can't say that. Well, do you know what? Facts are facts. There was periods of times through that year when you're trying to scrape the money together to get on that road, to go to Dublin to do your first radio interview or your first TV interview, and you think, this will make me now. And then you see, a week later, you go, has that had any impact? But we all know that it does, and it's building a brand. So I suppose we built the brand, and we became accepted and kind of well known for what we do. And then the big thing was, could we transition this and monetize this brand to a landing space that could make money and secure our future as a family? I'm only 43 yet, so we've a long way to go. And the one thing I wanted to do was have all of what I've learned and picked up, and we've traveled well over the last 7, 8, 9 years, bring that back and realize, is there a model here locally? And if that model does exist, as I said, do we have the ingredients? And if we have the ingredients, can we open something that creates an experience for a stayover? And the hotel, which was closed for nearly 12 years, was locally purchased, locally invested, and they were looking for an operator to come in. So we didn't take the decision lightly. but we have absolutely no regrets. Is it hard work? By God, yes. This is morning to night, like it's relentless, and you're trying to keep a team together because in the winter Moville sort of dips then, and all you can do there is just adapt and change your model back to some element of cost saving. But as I said, we've been welcomed with open arms to the main street because the hotel's been here for 200 years. The building is 200 years old, which and only actually this month is it 200 years old. So we've stripped it right back to its original stone on the outside, which restricts what you can do when you're trying to modernize to the demands of the current consumer, yeah, who wants everything from a USB, you know, through to instant Wi-Fi in the room. So the restrictions on that was always very, very, very challenging. But one thing we wanted was that it was going to be personally ourselves. And the fact that it's 16 bedrooms, the fact that, you know, there's sort of, it's a boutique style, which is a lovely word that may be trendy, but it's one that I like because to me, the word boutique means you can look after me personally, yeah, not just the aesthetics of the place, because the aesthetics are lovely for the first 5 minutes. After that, it's the person, you know, and people buy people. Yeah. End of story. It doesn't matter what I'm trying to sell you in this hotel. People buy people, and if people can buy into our staff and ourselves and see that we're here, which we are, you know, that in a sort of subconscious way will get trading up immediately. And make no mistake about it, this is a business with huge risks, that there is money and repayments and staff wages that need to be paid on a weekly basis. So we can't lose control and let what happened this week in China run away with ourselves. It's just stay grounded. Do what we do, and we'll continue to do that and continue to welcome people here to what I honestly believe is one of the nicest areas in Donegal. And I can say that I'm not from Moville, which surprises people. In 20 years here, I'm actually from a place called Burt, B-U-R-T, which is on the border with Derry, which is about 20 minutes from here. So you'll always be a blow-in in any part of Ireland that you're arriving, regardless of 22 years plus being here. Yeah.
We can't kind of go on at all until we talk about your most recent accolade, which is the World's Best Cookery Book, which is a big, big achievement. So congratulations to you. You were over in Macau for that, weren't you? By way of Hong Kong. Nice and quiet there at the time, yes.
Yeah, well, I distinctly remember going back a couple of weeks ago. I think we were at the Taste of Dublin, and, yes. And Hong Kong and China trip was coming upon me, and I thought, I've done no research. I don't do anything. So I literally ran into the two guys sitting in front of me, and I said, have you ever been to Hong Kong? And of course, it was, oh my God, yeah, we've just returned. Yeah. So you gave me this fantastic guide, which saved me out there because we had no time to explore research. But yeah, just back, literally just back a few days, an amazing trip. Macau, it's weird, I'm not going to lie. It's man-made. It's certainly not what I expected in terms of a China experience. You have to go further afield to find that. Yeah. But lucky enough to be out there, needed a reason and an excuse to go to China. Found one in relation to being nominated to represent Ireland at the Gourmand Book Awards. And as humble as we try to be, we are so excited inside that we've won this, because we took away the top award, which was the chef's book, cookery book, best in the world, which as a family we're absolutely delighted with.
Amazing. Well done to you for that. It's a huge achievement. It's gotten a great reception from our point of view online. In particular, we've seen so many of the great and good of the Irish food industry congratulating you and being delighted for you. But locally as well, it's been like, you know, so many people around really, really happy for you by the looks of things.
Yeah, look, I mean, first of all, nationally and even internationally, there's a lot of goodwill and a lot of warmth towards it. And it's something that I've been very lucky to experience almost with nearly any stage further that we take as a risk in developing our career or as a business. And then, you know, sometimes we see in Ireland that when people come back to their own community, sometimes it gets overlooked and forgotten, but certainly not the case here. I mean, genuinely arrived home to a shock surprise. I knew I was coming here to a family meal, and it's how I wanted it. Hadn't seen our daughters for over a week, and I thought it's going to be lovely. Pulled into the street, like, and there's hundreds of people and some big names standing there, and you're going, oh my God, I cannot believe this has just happened. And I'm never short of words, but that particular night was the first time ever, apart from my wedding day, that my voice dried up and I went, I'm completely got here. They've got me this time. So we realised very quickly, when someone takes me out of my comfort zone, that's how to strip them back, and that's how to get them back right, we've got them here now. We've got them on the edge. What do we do with them? But lovely. And I mean, the hotel hasn't stopped since. The buzz and the book sales and and the goodwill messages, and the media are craving it at the moment, which I find shocking, that you've got that award and all of a sudden everyone wants to have a biddy and a bit of the time to get an insight into, you know, how did you create a book that won an accolade like that? And of course, I hadn't a clue when we were writing a book. It was one of those things that it ended up back in the cupboard multiple times, and I said, you know what, I can't do this any longer. This has gone on too long, so you revisit it. So there is no answer, and anybody coming expecting me to say, this is how you do it, no, there's no model here in how we create it, what we've done. So,
a proud homecoming then, and I think the Irish are proud that an Irish cookbook has gotten an amazing accolade internationally. Who knew? I mean, how far Irish cuisine has actually come in a few short years.
Yeah, that's the one thing I got from it, because some people were asking me, just family, they were saying to me, you know, what did the judges say? You know, and I thought about it and I said, oh my God, I need to go back. And I went back to research what they had said in relation to the book. And they said a multiple of things. They said first and foremost that you're a chef that has stripped away the technology of, you know, high-end, dare I say it, gastronomy that is unachievable for people. You've stripped it right back to what international people see Ireland as, which is clean, which is green. And then I referred to that in my speech where I said, you know, the world at the minute are trying to make their food green. We've always been green. Ireland has always had that. So I think what they've said is that we've told a story of basically food and let the food do the talking, which was our intention from day one. I mean, it's funny because I personally don't believe it's the best cookery book in the world. I mean, there's other ones that I go to that I inspire to go to, and they inspire me. And I suppose in some ways that's just sort of the feeling that others had towards our book, that they could relate to it. And it did take us right back to your mother or grandmother sort of times, when that typical modest, honest food that provided nutrition, a wholesomeness, is what people seem to want to read. But then put it into a category of chefs, and you're sitting alongside people that I looked up to for years, and you're sitting seeing them three seats away, and you're going, it never entered my head that we possibly even had a chance of winning this award in that category. And then to hear it announced and to see their reaction, which was nothing but congratulatory and warm, and to see that we've made good friends and that we've promoted and networked Ireland, which I think, to answer your question eventually, means that we have risen as a country in our recognition, both in terms of our ingredients, our skill set, and as individuals, how we tell stories and how we can communicate, socialise and relate to people. And that doesn't, despite what people think, involve alcohol. It just involves manners, and it involves people being themselves. And I think as we steady the ship in Ireland to make ourselves more sort of presentable internationally, I think that's been the winner over the last week or so since we've come back with this.
And are there specific ingredients that you think international eyes particularly associate with Ireland at this point in time?
Yeah, I think it's beyond what we all jump to as a conclusion, and it annoys me, if I'm honest, when someone goes, you know, is it still bacon and cabbage that you do? Yeah, of course Ireland does bacon and cabbage, and we do it exceptionally well.
Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, and it's amazing at high end, it's amazing at pub, gastro pub level, it's all of that. But I think at the moment there's our beef and there's our dairy industry, and there's the seafood starting to creep into the conversation, you know, and particularly that could be selfish for me, given the proximity of where we're located, overlooking Greencastle and Loch Foyle and our fish. And that was a big part of our book. It's also a big focus on what we do here at the hotel in terms of the menu, because I believe we're telling a story for others this time, which is our fishermen, which we name and we say, look, this is who owns the boat, this is the skipper, and they're actually sitting up there beside you, go have a conversation. So I think I saw that creeping into the conversation more so when we were talking in China this time, particularly to some of the European chefs. And our dairy industry, our butter, I think our butter has saved us. When the recession hit, you know, and Irish people said, let's go to margarines and spread, because marketeers led us that way. Butter got forgotten, and it gave Ireland an opportunity to sell butter to the world. And now we have them all buying it. And of course, we're back in love with it, and butter's twice the price, because the manufacturers are going, you know what? Sorry, but the Germans still want it, the Argentinians still want it, the French want the Irish butter. So I think it's all a lot, you know, and given that you're an island, you've got to look at your best. I suppose your best produce, and it has to be our dairy industry, and that grass-fed from the beef right through to our butter and our cheeses. And thankfully now, as an island, we're seeing that, don't let the seafood disappear to Europe. still 85-90% of it, and that is definitely coming back, where the consumption and the perception of Irish seafood is certainly up there.
And if we throw away the idea of Ireland as a whole for a brief moment, because we're really talking here about a county, and how is Donegal's cuisine kind of different to the rest of Ireland?
First of all, we get more rainfall, which gives you more nutrition in the soil, which allows you to create tastier produce. And I'm talking here about the homegrown produce. I'm talking about our potatoes, you know. And historically, Donegal was one of the counties that would have promoted, particularly given the border region area, seed potatoes, and are still to this day very famous for enhancing and protecting a lot of the seed potatoes from generations ago. So as much as in my earlier answer we're saying we're not all about potatoes, but to look at it from a county point of view, Donegal people we're very rebellious quietly. Give us a vote and we'll go against the rest of the country. Do you know, and that's that, you know, we get criticised for that. You know, GAA's flying and we'll play defensive, you know. And then when people know that we're defensive, we go the other way. It's like there's an element of surprise continuously that we try to do. And I think in food that the modesty of people in Donegal, you know, which is a polite way of saying you're a cute chara, whatever that may be. But that modesty is that, you know, we never really spoke. We never visualized and let people see how beautiful a county it was. Social media came and it almost gave people this smoke screen that their identity behind it allowed them to say things, test the water, test the market. And I've seen that come through in terms of the producers, that there's a belief now in what comes out of this county is as good as any other part of the country, and rightly so. And yes, we can all talk about Ireland as an island when we're in China, but when we're on the island of Ireland, I want Donegal to focus. When you're in Donegal, I want Dinishon to focus. I want Moville to focus. So I've got to make noises as to what's different about us individually here on the main street and allow that to filter up and back down through the messages, depending on really, I suppose, where we're trying to marketeer that. But yeah, what I definitely think is different is the increased rainfall has helped our soil to produce some of the finest rapeseed oil and some of the finest grown and, again, grass-fed beef that exists in the country. And the entire county is surrounded by water. Killybegs, you know, Greencastle, Burtonport. We have seriously good seafood, and they're caught by local families that we are now connecting with and telling that story.
And so this interview is happening in your hotel here, and the menu is all about Irish food. It's all about the suppliers in the area. Who is the customer of the hotel?
Yeah, very much the customer is twofold for us, because when you have a hotel, the first thing you got to do is create a safe space. You know, that's what a hotel's job is. And I keep reminding people of that, because those that come through the door, you have a responsibility for. Ethically, within business, there's a model that you've got to say, what are we after? And as much as getting you guys here today for the first time, as welcome as you are, the attention that has come on us in the last 12 months, the accolade that the hotel has won, would not have happened if we didn't decide that our model was going to be basically bring a community with you. We created 36 jobs here in a hotel that was closed for 12 years. There's almost a €2 million investment. That's very brave. It's very risky. And then I had to look and say, well, is the produce available and accessible to me locally, that we can bring the marine and those fishing families with us and showcase what they do? Can we go to an organic beef? Can we go to vegetables that are grown locally? Is it there? That research is lonely. And when it gets done, that forms your model. So it also attracts the type of customer that you want. So we're a hotel that, for example, we don't have screens. And not that I don't love rugby, GAA, I mean, I'm passionate about it, but it's about the food, it's about the customer service experience when you come in that door. And I've got this thing, if someone comes through that door and they aren't acknowledged within 5 seconds, I'm quite annoyed if that was to happen, because the local jobs that are created for locals around here, they know the area, so instantly we're not having to invest back in them, because they know that and they become the marketeers for us. So the customers, thankfully, first and foremost, are local. And then when you have bedrooms, you've got to try and attract people here over other premises. And the food is leading that at the moment, thankfully. It's taking time. where we're about 14 months into it. So that takes time to get a message out there. And people are very good in that they'll come, they'll experience. And we don't have a marketing budget. We don't have a huge marketing strategy. What we do have is the gift of the gab and good communication that if we are networking, I mean, someone said to me recently, what's your marketing strategy? And I said, it's my next customer. Because if they can leave here and tell loads of people about the experience, well, that's how this will organically grow. And we're bringing the community with us. I often say that we could get milk, particularly given our geographic position to Northern Ireland, 45% cheaper. But why, when you have a milkman, imagine losing a milkman in a small community like this. A guy who is a great marketeer, and not the individual, but every milkman in Ireland, I think, is the best marketeer ever, because they love going to the next premises to tell good, bad, or indifferent. Yeah. So we've focused in on that, and that is the importance for us, yeah. That you will see our milkman trooping through the door in the mornings, mm-hmm. as you will with our bread that gets made 100 yards up the street. In a bakery, it's gone 135 years. You know, why would we try and produce sourdough breads and things that probably the skill set isn't there and is time consuming, mm-hmm. when you have craft skills like that that's been there for generations and passed on? So I suppose what you're hearing in this is there's just a lovely customer base profile that appreciates what we're doing, both economically for the community, and secondly, I think in terms of making Moville a destination potentially for good hospitality and food, which is what tourism sector is about.
I suppose a lot of people always think of Ireland as Dublin and everywhere else. And it's a fair assessment to say, I guess, in a lot of ways. But in terms of proximity, you're so close to Derry. I remember one time we were up in Derry, and when we bumped into you a couple of weeks back, you were like, you're only half an hour away from me.
Yeah.
And you instantly assume Donegal is so, so far away. But really, it isn't actually that far either. It's, you know, Derry is very accessible, relatively speaking, for most of the country. And it is an unusual situation because it's one of the only destinations in Ireland where you have to cross a border twice and you get your text messages coming in saying, welcome to the UK and I'm back in Ireland and all that. It is a remote part of Ireland at the end of the day, but there's so much going for it.
Yeah, I think that remoteness is our strength because given the fact that we're about 18 minutes, about 20 kilometres away from the border, I mean, I grew up with a border on a border. It disappeared. Potentially it may come back, but that's a conversation for another day. Mm-hmm. When you're looking at Derry, I mean, our hotel's called the Foyle Hotel. When you look out, it's the River Foyle. Mm-hmm. The River Foyle connects Derry and Donegal. Mm-hmm. And just to put it into perspective for people for a moment or two, the troubles of Northern Ireland that existed and potentially have existed for generations, there needed to be an escape. And that escape was Donegal. So that hospitality in Donegal, that almost safeness of there is no, you know, British soldier rule presence here. So it was like, we'll cross the border, we'll escape to Donegal, we'll relax, and there's great hospitality. Mm-hmm. Have a conversation in Derry, have a conversation on the way to Belfast. And people said that arriving and crossing that border into where we are here in Inishowen and in Donegal was as good as getting a massage. It just completely relaxed people instantly. So the River Foyle provides that, and it also, I think, provides a great connection and an affinity that I certainly have personally with Derry, with the city, and with the fact that it's Ireland's third biggest city. A very safe and vibrant city to come to right now, with an airport, yeah. with a multiple of hotels continue to open up, food offering that's hugely on the increase. Yeah, we're the hinterland of this, you know, and that's the connection. And I mean, I do a weekly radio slot in there on BBC, and I'm always saying that, you know, we're together. There is no borders in food. There is no borders in tourism. There should never be borders in that because, you know, that is the same grass that those cows are eating. Yeah. They don't know that there was a border there 20 years ago and then it may return. So that I suppose, is a bit of an issue that I have politically with what's going on, because it's left us very vulnerable here in Inishowen, and you've kind of alluded to that because we are, Dublin is far away. Dublin see us as hugely far away, particularly when it comes to dishing out funding and things like that. I always say we're like the big toe, we're the last to get the circulation up here. But at the same time, we got to step up, remind them, and I've certainly done that, yeah. where it has been the application of an all-island or a Republic of Ireland-style VAT rate. You know, it can't be the same for us here in rural Inishowen or rural Ireland as it is for central Dublin, that has 93% occupancy versus an average 60 in rural Ireland. You know, those are difficulties, those are challenges. They're part of a business. They're ones that we can't control. But one thing I can assure you is arriving now in the Northwest collectively, I mean, it's just a lovely piece of hospitality that's provided because people know they've got to work harder. You know, it's like going foreign to the hot sun holidays and going outside the mainstream areas, you find people are much friendlier, they're much happier to see you, they're much more appreciative of your business, and that's certainly what I think collectively we have going for ourselves here in the Northwest.
I'm intrigued by these cows who don't see borders or anything like that. I'd like to be one at this point in time. It sounds like a good way of life.
If we talk about tourism for a second, obviously it's hugely important in Ireland at the moment, especially around food. Donegal is obscure and it is in ways hard to get to. So if a tourist comes here, can you offer them an insight into the things up here that they have to see and do?
Yeah, totally. Because when they've made the effort to come here, firstly, as I say, you appreciate that. You provide the safe space and you provide that tone of conversation that is both welcoming and a little bit inquisitive of them without going into their boundaries on a personal basis. And it's basically to find out what is it they're after. Because if they're after the fresh air, the openness, the sea air, the activities, we have it. If they're after somewhere tranquil, quiet, and they're going to explore it by foot or bike, we have it. It's not something we need to arrange. It's here. It's on our doorstep. We're ready to go. Within minutes, we can have you on any one of those activities. Golfing is massive. This is the type of business we tend to be getting right now. It's the walking. It's that the sort of person that's after the mindfulness, the space, the fresh air, the cleanliness that we can offer. And we have it, regardless if it's raining, by the way, because I think rain is something that is an experience. I really do. And I think the Wild Atlantic Way has actually taught us, do you know what? It's coats. It's get out there and get driving. So, I mean, for the likes of yourselves, an example, for us, the big catalyst for us in the new show is Malinhead. You know, just recently filmed Star Wars, you know, more footage going to come into the next show about to be announced. You know, that was a month of filming, but it's a lasting legacy that we can all cling on to. It's Ireland's most northerly point. Historically, it's fantastic. It's a beautiful drive, and you can see as far away as Scotland from it on a day like today. We're close. We come in around the coast. You've that Inishowen 100, which is arguably 100 miles of the most scenic drive in Ireland, I honestly believe, in terms of unspoilt areas that you can stop, have a very safe conversation with a native, with a local, who could talk about anything from, you know, the heather on the hill to the lamb to the dinner that they're having that evening. And we, for too long, have turned our back on that. We're almost embarrassed by it in Ireland to think that. But now we're seeing that the Germans, the French, the Americans, the Japanese love to talk and to connect with these people who are potentially gathering the wool and finding out where it's going next. And I suppose it's back to my earlier point where I believe we're really good conversationists. And I think that I should not have to provide commentary where there is scenic route to be explored. I should just have to say to you, guys, go to Malinhead. I want you to leave here and I want you to take in the sights. And when you get out there, allow yourself 2 hours. You know, the tourist that rushes always gets caught and realizes we get as far as Malinhead. It's too good to leave. It's just too good to leave and to realize the historicness that you're actually standing on the edge of Ireland. So, I mean, just behind us, we've one of the best water sports activity centers in Ireland, you know, in an Inish adventure. You can do anything down there from a bit of fun to leisurely, you know, to kayak and sea kayak and catch it, cook it, where you can go and catch the fish. I mean, that's holiday heaven. Yeah. And again, regardless of the weather. So where you've got sea activity, where you've got fresh air, cleanliness, you've got good people, and you feel safe and you feel wanted and appreciated, it's endless. I could keep you a week to do this.
Yeah. This is Chew the Fat, sponsored by Marks & Spencer.
This summer, in celebration of all things fresh and delicious, M&S Ireland is offering exceptional value on 4 fruity family favourites. Until the 30th of July, pick up a juicy mango, twin pack of Hass avocados, 4 pack of donut peaches, or a punnet of sweet baby plum tomatoes for just 90 cent each.
Now, what can you do with them? Well, in this sunny weather, we are huge fans of popping some peaches on the barbecue, having them in a salad or even as a dessert. But they're also incredible with just some barbecue chicken. Yeah. Absolutely delicious. Avocados, well, we are millennials after all, so they are perfect as breakfast, as an avocado on toast, with just some lime juice, some salt flakes and pepper, maybe a little sriracha too.
Delicious.
Pick them up in store at your local Marks & Spencer.
Should we talk about salt?
The S word.
Yes. So famously, you are anti-salt is the wrong word, but salt averse. And can you explain why?
Yeah, you're probably emotionally touching a button now, which I don't talk about an awful lot, and it's not for any reason, because I should, but you know, it's to do with health first and foremost, and apologies, because I do get a little bit sort of caught up in it when I go to talk about it, but happy to share it. So I suppose what happened to me when I was 33 is I took two heart attacks, which is a huge shock to an individual. I'm quite a passionate, adrenaline driven type of person. I love what I do. I love a conversation. I love new people. And I just love talking to find out. And I'm a big believer in collecting people with me in life as I go along. And that's what's built up to the success, I think, that we received this week in relation to the accolades. There's a lot of seriously good people and goodwill around me. So I'm a big believer in that. But then when something like this happens to you, you get very vulnerable. You get very demoralized, because I was told, honestly, and I think this is the first time I'm going to say this, but I was told that my career's over. It's over. It's done by a cardiologist. We never want you back in a kitchen. It's the best thing ever happened to me, because I just defiantly, again, being from Donegal, said, no, I'm not accepting this. So I looked at, I suppose, what could I do that could change my, not necessarily my lifestyle, but certainly maybe factors that may have contributed to the heart disease that, that continues to this day. And salt is definitely one contributor. Mm. And I had been privileged enough to work for a blue chip company in product development, where I saw how salt sort of went in to be used as both a flavor enhancer and preserve and the processed food. So I got a little bit angry with myself and with marketeers for allowing this to sort of creep in, and these 2-for-3 pizza and processed food offerings. So I think casually one day I said, you know, I'm going to take salt out of my diet. And I reduced salt. So my issue is the processed additional sodium salt levels that were hidden and causing the obesity and potentially causing what had happened to me, because the only other thing that I could blame was hereditary. And as I often said, I've never found a card in a card shop that said to my dad, thanks for passing on those lovely genes that gave me multiple heart attacks. Like, I thank you for that.
There's so that, a market.
Yes. So that's where that came from. And I suppose it sort of, it clung on then as the no salt chef for a period of time. It was never commercial in terms of trying to strategize a brand, because it was going against, I suppose, everything that we were taught classically as chefs. And it's funny, because I remember a lot of other chefs going, geez, what do you got? You know, and it was kind of in that tone, what do you got here? Like, because, you know, we all need salt in our diet. And all of those chefs have ended up being my best friend when they heard, you know, why I was doing what I was doing. So that, in a nutshell, might sort of conclude where that sort of period of time had come from. And I suppose I referred there to the best thing that ever happened to me, because it was, and it is, because I feel very in control now. When I got back onto, you know, look, lifestyle and mindfulness and just being relaxed and comfortable with the fact that it happened. No one caused it. I didn't set out to get it. Accept it, and just to realize that you've still a lot to give life. And if you can improve the way that you eat, and food is fuel, I've often said that, and I mean, it's your medicine, and forget about the shakes and everything else that commercially are put in front of us. It's back to what the book is about. It's back to, can you get good, decent food cooked simply? End of story. Not chefy, mad things going on there. That's okay to eat out occasionally, but to eat at home, you know, you've got to cook for your audience, and that audience tonight may be you yourselves. For me, it might be my daughters, and where can we get the best nutrition, still enjoy it, provide that safe around the table, that Donegal table feeling for us at home. And as it was, those are the transitions, but it hasn't, I mean, it's come at a cost. You know, there's a lonely period for about 6 or 7 years when you couldn't earn money. That's difficult. That's pressure. And that's financial pressure when you've got kids. So you had to rebuild, and then became a point where I suppose I wanted to communicate my cooking skills to basically make sure that what happened to me could be avoided by as many people as possible. And that's the period in time when I started to realize I actually love giving talks, love giving demonstrations. And I've, it's not looked back from that. And I've got a lot of support along the way from a lot of very good festival committees and people around the country.
And on that, how do you find the time to do everything? Because you are one of the busiest men that we know. Between every time it's either you're on the TV, it's, oh, you've gone to Cork to do RTE with Dahi and Maura. And then God love you, that drive back. Yeah. You know, you're a trooper. And then obviously you've here, you've the restaurant, you've the hotel and everything. You know, you have a secret in time management. What is it?
Do you know, I've been asked for it multiple times. I'll tell you what my answer is always. I'm a big believer in being present. Mm. And right now I'm with you, you know, and I feel that we're having a conversation just between the three of us, that you're digging a little bit more into me, and I can see that you're intrigued by certain elements of it. That's life. And I think that whether if I'm in the car now going to Cork, pre my cardiac, I was beating that journey, trying to say, I've got to go to Dublin, tensing up in the steering wheel and feeling sore, feeling tired, getting groggy, getting grumpy, and then realising, you know what, no one wants to listen to that. No one cares. So I've got to change my attitude and my process. And the one piece of information I always give everyone is there's a process to everything. There's a process to me sitting here to have this conversation with you. There was one for you driving up to be here. It's enjoy that process, realise the time that's involved and it takes. And also, if it's a work thing, to enjoy it and not to see it as what we're doing at the moment, 16-hour days. So when I'm in the car now, to me, that's a lovely space where the mindfulness kicks in. And that, I think, allows for the time management to go, okay, now this is where I need to be tonight, and I am going to have to leave Cork, you know, after the show and drive back to any show at 2 o'clock in the morning and be here at 7:30. And again, just the attitude is, well, those people that are staying in this hotel want to see you fresh, vibrant, and they want to see the positivity from you. So that's the skills in terms of what I think I have is time management, is being very, very present and appreciating what's around you and not fighting it. Mm. You know, you can't fight it. If you fight it, you're beat.
Very true. Mm. It's inspirational, actually, because, geez, we could do it and more lessons like that in life. I think we'll just clip this bit and play it to ourselves constantly and go, be present, Russell and Patrick, you need it.
So we can call you an acclaimed, accomplished author now. Are you planning the next cookbook?
Yes, I am, to be honest. And again, look, nothing sits comfortably with me when people go, you're acclaimed, you use certain words. Like, I mean, we won an award out there that I never even mentioned because I was uncomfortable with it. We got second in the Celebrity Chef cookbook. And to me, everyone's a celebrity because you're known to your family. You're known to people around you. And it's less of that sort of ego work. It's more like who are you today? I mean, 5 minutes time, I'm a chef in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. Tonight, I'm a dad at home. End of story. Like, that's, again, back to the whole presence thing. So a lot has changed in the last week. It's just been a real shift in people's extra warmth to you and the attention that and craving that people want for more information from you. So again, I suppose to get to the point about the book, we had a deal done for a book pre the awards, and I'm a very loyal person. I'm very loyal, and it was very smart on certain publishers at the moment to sit and to look at it and say, your next book, what are you thinking? And we are thinking something that certainly is beyond the Donegal this time. I think we've done that. You know, that some people don't realise that we had a book in 2010, which was The Community Chef, which was about this community. And it sold over 5,000 copies, which was amazing, self-published. This one has come out and has sold thousands and has gone to reprint at the minute, which is excellent because I was the one that put forward Donegal is a strong enough brand for people nationally to buy into. They seem to love Donegal. And it took me a while to get that across the table. And I was so stubborn about it that I embossed it into the book that you can feel Donegal. So people are rubbing it. Like, that was pure intentional on my behalf. I went to the Frankfurt Book Fair and I said, what's different? And I found this one book. I said, because the first thing everyone does, they rub a book. So you need to have a sensory about it. And I thought, well, if we're chefs, we're taste, we're value, is there anything sensory going on here? Mm-hmm. So we embossed it, pushed down the Donegal piece. And the first thing people do is they're rubbing, they don't realise it, they're rubbing Donegal. It's like massaging the ego of County Donegal. So we got that across and it's worked. And all of a sudden it worked nationally and now it's worked internationally. Yeah. So I suppose the point I'm getting to is we're on this journey at the moment of the next book, which is going to be early 2020. But in some ways, I'm sort of sitting today kind of talking out loud, thinking that does it need revisited in terms of not what we've achieved, but in terms of the potential of the market, because obviously there's going to be more of a focus now in the next book, very much so based on what we've achieved with this one. Mm. So I think we'll be having a very friendly conversation again soon with the publishers, but and certainly I'm going to have a bit of a team around me this time, because a book's not a... It's certainly not an overnight project, and it's one that you do need the support and the help of a lot of individuals with.
Do you enjoy the writing and development and the whole process involved with the cookery books?
No. No. Absolutely, I hate writing.
That was the straightest answer
of the entire No. Writing and chefs in general, yeah. And it's worth putting this out here. I mean, some chefs will laugh at this and some will disagree with it, but most reason why chefs are in the kitchen is they're quite illiterate at other things. And there's quite a high level of numeracy and literacy problems within hospitality. That's not a negative, because it means we're far more creative in the kitchen. I'm certainly somewhere in between in those. I know what I want, and I know what I want to achieve, and I know what I want it to feel like, and I know what I want it to read like. So to sit down and to read, to start writing, a recipe is fine, but the jargon that's now expected around it, for me, no. That loses me. And give me a microphone and I'll entertain however amount of people. But no, there's a struggle there, if I'm honest, yeah. to get what I'm thinking onto paper without it going into this huge rant that has no full stops and no nothing problems. Else. Yeah. So that's where the help's needed, yeah. And no shame in that. And that's where you need somebody to go, absolutely. Stop, Brian. What are you saying there? What are you actually saying there? And then they readdress it, and you're going, wow, that, you know, that's really, really good. And that's what you guys do, you know, that's, and we do what we do. So it's been comfortable with the skills that I have. What I do enjoy is what gets to the photography, it gets to the proofreading, it gets to see the visualization. I love that. And that is, again, a time when no one else sees it. And then the book launch happens and everyone's going, oh, wow, we didn't know you were doing that. Yeah. You know, so there's a lot of hidden time. And you do question that time. I've often said it to people when you're, you know, don't rush to do a book. Mm. I have chefs who ring me all the time saying, look, I'm going to do a book. And I go, right, okay. A month later, they'll go, geez, you fried my head about that. But you're right, like, we're not ready to do a book. And what's the book about? So I think if you're to say to me now, like, you're going to do another book, where's this going to end? I'm not setting a target where I'm going, I need to have 4 cookbooks, 5 cookbooks. No, absolutely not. If the time's right, I'll feel that it's right. If there's a story to be told, I'll tell it. The last story was certainly about Donegal, and I wanted to tell it. The one previous to that was the transition, you know, from what had happened to me across into a community and what that felt like to be part of a community that I ignored for the first 15 years as a chef and didn't understand that a community could grow together, grow the vegetables, and that was a big part of that. So the next one certainly will be a trip that we may have mentioned earlier that starts in Donegal and may finish on another peninsula along the Wild Atlantic Way.
No marketing involved in that, brilliant. Yeah. Which cookbooks do you always go to?
I remember a cookbook when I was in college in 1993 in Killybegs. And very, very interestingly, it has flashed back at me in the last week, because there's a lecturer there, Gabriel McSharry, who said to us all, he says, every year you go forward as a chef, make sure you get the World Gourmand Book Winner. And I purchased in 1993 the first Gourmand book, which was about, it's an Asian book about breads. Now, think about it, Asian and bread, you think, needs to be spices. And there's the most beautiful, stunning picture of a girl holding a loaf of sourdough. And look at how trendy sourdough right now is. And there was that badge and label that was the World Gourmand Book Award. And now from what's happened to us, you know, you think back and you think that was one of the first cookery books that I bought, which was 1993. But I've revisited that multiple times. It'd be wrong of me not to take inspiration from a very good friend in Nevin Maguire in terms of books. He's the guru, yeah, when it comes to writing books and marketing them and getting them out there. So all of his books were at a time where you picked them up and went, wow, you know, this. And I mean, very openly, I just said to him, Nevin, look, I'm absolutely robbing this. I love it. Do you know, and it's the go-to, because the cookbook that I wrote is for an audience. And who is your audience? Well, the audience to me is my mum, you know, my aunties, people that live, you know, and cook for themselves and want to improve the way they cook. It's not a chefy chef cookbook that is full of foams. You know, we can do that and have fun in the restaurant, but people won't relate to that. And it's like your audience when you're doing festivals and demonstration. What goes down well is, on a level, talk to them, let the food be the conversation, let that be the catalyst, and let it gel people together. And if you can capture that in cookery books like what Nevin has done, Balamaloo, I mean, Darina, one of Darina's forgotten skills, amazing book. You know, that is one that the pages are teared out of, because, you know, you're going back, you're saying to yourself, when it came to time there recently, and we're talking about pickling again and vinegars, and I go, hold on, I remember a full section in that book.
which is real sort of, you're looking at it and you're thinking, she's not just telling the story, she's telling you how to do it in a process with added recipes. I mean, that to me is one of the best books this country has produced as well.
I thought of a question on the answer that you gave to creating a cookbook, which is cookery analytical scientific alchemy, or is it creative expression?
I think it's both. I think savory cooking is certainly just being creative, being instant, and trialing recipes and testing recipes and making them your own. Because one thing that I'm very clear about is that no one owns the ingredients, no one owns the skills. So if I apply the word baking, grilling, pan frying, sautéing it, I can't assume that you know what the word sauté means. So I've got to explain that, okay? And that's a process, and there's science to that. You know, and in savory cooking, one extra carrot is not necessarily going to destroy a carrot soup, because saying four carrots depends on the size of the carrots, you know. It's weight, so you've got to get sort of that side of it in there where you're standardizing a recipe, which is what we've had to do. So I'd say there's amalgamation of both, but certainly in the cookbook and in Donegal Table that we wrote, it's more an expression of who I am, what we do, and what the style of cooking is. But I mean, putting a recipe together, I mean, everyone's grandmother's recipe and mother's recipe could say anything from cups to fluid ounces to grams, and you know, getting that standardized, and I talk a lot about this in terms of standardizing what we do in restaurants, what we do in hotels, and getting those recipes to work, because give 12 people a Genoese sponge recipe and 12 identical ingredients, will you get 12 identical Genoese sponges? No, because people's personality comes into the cooking. The very force of how you mix to collapse something, keep it aerated and light if you've got a nice mellow personality. And I think that's a lovely exercise where you just see, and I've done it, where you've got 12 people in a room together and you get the sponges. You think, we're going to make a basic sponge. And you can see, you can nearly tell by the sponges, the personality of the person. So food has a personality. It is a fashion, and it needs just moved along by the individual, which is just your hands, which were created long before there was gadgets and kitchen aids and everything else. So I do think then in baking, though, there certainly is more of a very structured science to that, because you can't decide to add an extra teaspoon of baking powder, because you'll need a new oven in the morning, you know. That's to me, is a different style of cooking, because it is baking and it is another skill, and it's one that I particularly love, and it's one that, again, I would use a lot to calm and just to get myself back on track, because it'd be wrong of me to think that you meet me and I'm always positive, and I do, and I know that I am sort of full of adrenaline, but there is times when that adrenaline hits a height, and then that can only go one way and there's a drop. So stabilization and standardization in myself is also key to that. And bacon is one of the go-to things where I go to, just to relax and level that back out again and involve some people you want to be around when you're doing it.
As you're saying that, it's such a truthful thing for a lot of people. And I think there is two kind of groups of people in the world where some people find cooking and anything to do with cooking just stressful and incredibly stressful. But then there's a lot of people like ourselves who think of it as therapy in a lot of ways. You know, the amount of times I've been stressed out and I'm like, I'm going into the kitchen now. Leave me alone. Yeah. And I just cook and I just make stuff, because it is so therapeutic. And baking, You can just put yourself into it. And, you know, it's very grounding as well. You know, when you make bread or something, and you can just, the feel of it when it's all soft, or when you lift it out of the bowl and it's all the strings coming out of it, the gluten, it's the best feeling ever. It's a really difficult thing to try and bring people from the other side of the island over to your side and be like, please just, you know, try and find some joy in cooking, never mind the eating. And I know there's so many things that can be said about individuals' enjoyment of eating, but in cooking there is so much joy, and it's something that we have to do several times a day, as much as we can, that it's hard to bring people over. And I think you're doing a very good job of being able to make it sound so, you know, relaxing and enjoyable, and as you say, therapeutic as well.
Yeah, and I think you're right in referring to different people and how they react to that, because if they see it as a chore, and what they see as a chore is when they're unorganized. and they're driving home from work and they're going, God, I've got the kids coming home, I haven't done anything, and this all creeps in, and this is where we get agitated. You know, that planning, and even when we're giving talks and demonstrations here and classes in the hotel, it's very much about a relaxed atmosphere. It's very much about the tone of the teacher, you know, and if you can listen to that, and if you can become the teacher, and if you can become the tone, you're relaxing yourself back down again. And if you're relaxing yourself back down again, what happens then is you're going to teach yourself. And persons within themselves are the best teachers. Listen to themselves. Listen to yourself, and there's things about ourselves that we certainly don't like at times. To fix it, you know, it's a self-remedy, and I think cooking is the one thing that can provide that sense of touch, sensory, and I'll talk a lot about that, because if you feel an onion, you know if it's fresh. But take the time to actually, for a split second, go, oh, that is fresh. That's quite nice. And say to yourself, I wonder how many layers of skins in this onion. And that's just by counting it. You can say to yourself, I'm quite relaxed, because I'm not thinking about what I need to do for the office. And that's where the kitchen, I mean, 70% of our time is spent in the kitchen. And I refer to our kitchen, Donegal Table, as the boardroom, because it is a boardroom in our home. And we sit around it for the cup of tea. And again, I'll go back to the point of it being a safe space. And if you're a mum out there, if you're a dad out there, you know, you've got to create the safe space for the person that you've chose to live with. Yeah. It's as simple as that. And food and a cup of tea right through to a full three-course meal is the very much the part of the centerpiece of that allows that to happen. Because how many houses and dinner parties have we been in that is uncontrollable by the person who is supposedly in charge? Because they take on too much. Mm. They try to be too eventful in what they're doing. Mm. Rather than going at this time of year, you know what, there's some beautiful local tomatoes. The basil was grown beside it. There's a cheese down the road, and there's a local oil and a vinegar. Let it be less about yourself, more about the ingredients. Put that out as a display and bake the bread, which might take you 20 minutes. That in itself is enough for people to go, wow. What people do wrong is they try to, I suppose, over-exaggerate the fact that cooking dinner is stressful. And certainly over-invite, particularly barbecues. Like I think they're an absolute disaster, where people just, they say, right, we're going to have 20 or 30 for a barbecue. And it goes to process. You know, no one ever thinks of a lovely butterfly leg of lamb from the butcher. Let it slowly cook on there and get some naan breads and a yogurt. And 20 people are fed. Everyone's relaxed and enjoyed. And yeah, so food has to be a massive part of everyone's life. Full stop. It has to be your fuel. Full stop. And it has to be you controlling it, because you are doing the shopping. And that does not mean you need a big budget. It just means you need a wise head and some planning in place to realize that if I'm buying two carrots, that the other carrot and a half will be used in the next 3 to 4 days ahead. And it doesn't require £300 per week to keep a person living. It doesn't. I think it's on average you can get as low as about 50 to 60 euro to eat well, to be well for the week. That's not much.
For more episodes of Chew the Fat, for recipes, food features and travel guides, please check out our website, gastrogaze.com.